This is podcast number 20 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. I'm Marlene Peterson, and today I'll be sharing lessons from India. Several years ago, one of my daughters took a leap of faith and moved cross-country to Raleigh, North Carolina, where she hoped to get into a certain graduate program out there. Well, the graduate program didn't work out so well, but she started dating a young man from India. After about a year, my husband got a phone call. "I'm on my way over to your daughter's home to propose marriage. Do I have your blessing?" Of course, we were thrilled because he's a very good young man. And then my husband handed me the phone and my future son-in-law said, "I just need you to understand something. Sometimes these things happen very, very fast." I'm thinking, okay, maybe a month, maybe 2 months. A little while later, our daughter called full of excitement. This was on a Thursday or a Friday, and she said, "We're getting married next Saturday." I panicked a little. Earlier, she had told me about her future sister-in-law's wedding. Her fiancé's father had held an important government position, and in India, weddings are a really big deal. A family will save for years for the big event, and in this case, there had been over 1,500 guests over a 3-day celebration. Her dress was covered in jewels. What would they be expecting for their son? Having raised 8 daughters, in hindsight, I can definitely tell you the 1-week wedding plan really is a good way to go. You don't have time to fuss over things that really don't matter, and you just take care of the essentials. My daughters never cared about fancy things, so simple was just fine with her. The reason for the rush was that his parents were flying home to India after an extended stay in the United States, and there were certain cultural traditions that marriages needed to happen on certain days. It was either that day or it may be delayed for an unforeseen time. Now, my son-in-law had been raised in the Hindu faith, but had converted to our LDS faith, or Mormonism, several years earlier. They wanted to be married in an LDS temple, but they also wanted to honor his parents' Hindu faith. So we met early in the morning at the Raleigh LDS temple. Knowing how important the marriage of their son was, I worried that his parents would be offended, that they would not be allowed to go inside. But they weren't offended. They were gracious and respectful. They asked questions of us. His father spoke English, but his mother only spoke Hindi. But she has this bright, beautiful smile that speaks volumes of words. And then they waited patiently while we went inside for the wedding ceremony, which is a very simple ceremony in which a man and a woman are married for time and all eternity. Afterwards, we took pictures on the temple grounds, and then we went to an Indian restaurant to eat. I'd never eaten Indian food before, and I've loved being introduced to all the new tastes and spices I've never even heard of before. My son-in-law has taught me to cook several Indian dishes and buy spices for me. Yes, India has always been known for its spices, for a reason. My food world has been expanded. Then that afternoon, his mother dressed me and my daughters in beautiful silk saris. I watched her take an incredibly long piece of silk and skillfully pleat it around each of our waists and tie and wrap it, and then we headed off to a Hindu temple. And then we were introduced to their culture as they now explain the meanings and significance of their traditions to us. Just as we took our shoes off as we entered the LDS temple, signifying a holy place, they asked that we remove our shoes as we entered the Hindu temple. We sat on the floor in the middle of a large, intricately decorated hall where a much simplified wedding ceremony over the normal one took place. Evidently, the full ceremony typically begins in the middle of the night and can go on for many, many hours. My husband and I were asked to repeat things in Sanskrit, and there were candles and rice and so many things that I can't remember. And then we went home. Anshul had bought a big, beautiful home for them, and his mother and sister had prepared the welcome to it. There were flower petals and more candles. The Indian culture celebrates light, everything with a meaning and a significance. They dedicate their homes, and everything is towards strong family ties and to being good, decent, kind human beings. Here's the thing. Although the outward ceremonies were very different, the heart of them were the same. It was all about uniting families, about strong family bonds, of living lives of harmony and peace and love and joy, of welcoming children into families. Our cultures are very different, but we are more alike than different. There was a time when the Muslim could be found guarding Christian holy sites, and Christian could be found honoring Muslim holy days. One of the surprises of the Crusaders was finding, upon arrival in the Holy Land, Muslim, Jew, and Christian living side by side in harmony. An important part of the Muslim faith was cleanliness, and there were beautiful water fountains everywhere. These Crusaders came from dark, damp, dirty castles where they gnawed on bones to a place where there were great delicacies, beautiful silks, colorful mosaics. They found an advanced civilization, and many of them stayed. I've learned so many things from my son-in-law over the years. It's been interesting to see America through his eyes. It's been hard for him to understand how Americans can live so disconnected from each other. In India, he said, you know all your neighbors very well. The mothers would take all their kids out to the playground in the afternoon and visit with each other, and they watched out for each other's kids. Here, he said, neighbors don't even talk to each other. We definitely don't see eye to eye on everything, and we've had some lively discussions, but they always serve to expand my view and understanding. He challenges my thinking. I've learned so many things about India and the Hindu faith I didn't know, which is a lot. He has a much different view of the English occupation and Gandhi than what I'd read in the books. I haven't even scratched the surface, but my life has been enriched so much by being exposed to a new culture. We all know the saying, to know me is to love me. Isn't that why we want our children to study different cultures and different faiths? Do we not want to teach them first, seek to understand? There are many fears and prejudices out there. We have to begin to break them down as our world shrinks and as we interact with people of all nations and cultures. It is possible to be different and still get along, isn't it? How does the song go in South Pacific? You've got to be taught to hate and fear. You've got to be taught from year to year. It's got to be drummed in your dear little ear. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught to be afraid of people whose eyes are oddly made and people whose skin is a different shade. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught before it's too late, before you were 6 or 7 or 8, to hate all the people your relatives hate. You've got to be carefully taught. The song is right, but rather than teach our children to hate and fear, they've got to be carefully taught to love. That is why cultural studies is so important, is such an important part of the well-educated heart. We want our children to learn about other people's faiths, about their holidays and traditions, their art and their music, their important buildings and monuments, their heroes and fanciful stories, because through these things, we will begin to understand and thereby to love. I include crafts from holidays as well as foods from the various countries on Pinterest pages, but you can easily find many yourself to begin to introduce new cultures to your children. I wasn't really good at doing a lot when my children were growing up, but they do remember our study of the Jewish faith. We cooked Jewish food and celebrated some Jewish holidays, and we went to a Jewish synagogue. They remember that. They don't look down on Jewish people. They respect their faith and understand who they are, even though they believe differently than we do. I cringe when so-called Christians get enraged when they hear their children being taught of the Muslim faith in schools, or when they group all Muslims together into a group to be feared and hated. Do they not remember that God promised Abraham's son Ishmael that he would not forget his seed and would bless them? I accept that the angel Gabriel visited Muhammad because the message was to remind these nomads who had become idol worshippers that there is one God. Do you know the 5 pillars of Islam? Faith, prayer, charity, fasting, and a pilgrimage to a holy place. They are taught there is one God and that one should pray to him many times a day with a pure heart signified by washing. They have a personal responsibility to care for the poor and the needy. They are taught to fast as a way to draw nearer to God. And at least one time in their life, they strive to make a pilgrimage to a holy place where they all dress alike in white, where there are no rich and no poor, all the same in the eyes of God. Are these not all part of our Christian faith? Have not Christians also from time to time perverted the simple teachings of Jesus? Have they kept the form and lost the meaning? Do we not also see among Christians an outward show while losing the true spirit of our faith? Did we not see Christian killing Christian in the slaughter of Protestant and Catholic, and the forcing by violence of the Christian religion during the Spanish Inquisition? Shall we shun all Christians because of what has been done in the name of their religion? Or shall we search for its roots in true understanding? I'm not so quick to think that all Muslims are out there to kill me. I know what it is to be part of a misunderstood religious group upon which a governor of our United States, stirred up by fear and misunderstanding, issued an extermination order, driving men, women, and children from their homes in the dead of winter, making refugees of them in our land of the free and the brave. And even now we are mocked in a popular Broadway musical, shunned from Christian groups who will not let our families join their co-ops, who will boycott anything associated with the Mormon, who teach their children to fear and hate and avoid. I was talking with Jim Weiss, and my understanding is he talked about this publicly, so I believe I'm at liberty to share this. He is a world-renowned storyteller who has spoken at homeschool conferences for years. He is a delightful and a warm human being, but he was informed a couple of years ago that he was no longer welcome as a speaker at a major Christian homeschooling conference because he is a Jew. Where in all of Jesus' teaching is such a thing justified? For he taught us to love even our enemies, to do good to those who despitefully use us and hate us, to turn the other cheek, because he knows there is a much greater power than hate, and that is the power of love. I don't remember who said it, but the comment was made that we rejoice in the discovery of electricity, but there is a much greater power that is real and tangible, and if we ever harness its power, it will transform the world. Again, that power is love. History is loaded with stories of cruel and barbarous people whose lives were turned around by love. That love starts in the hearts of children who are carefully taught to love by their parents. I've included a series in the online library called the Our Little Cousin series, as well as the Twin series. These wonderful books begin to introduce children of different cultures around the world to hearts of children. Sometimes you may bump into something in them that makes you cringe. For instance, in Our Little Hindu Cousin, in the preface, it says something like, "Of course we know the Hindu race was a superior race to the dirty Muslims," or something of that sort. Don't throw the book away. Use it as a teaching moment with your children. And yes, these stories don't represent life as it is today. Let your children know these are like reading the stories of little pioneer children in our country who lived a long time ago. You're trying to layer in a sense of cultural differences, and these books weave in a lot of the traditions and histories of people around the world. Maybe one of you one day will write a new updated version, but for right now, this is what we have to work with. Racism is a huge problem in our country today. It's overcome with stories and understanding. I love the story of Mary Bethune, who was born into a slave family right after the Emancipation Proclamation. "Invest in the human soul," she said. "Who knows but that it may be a diamond in the rough?" She rose against overwhelming challenges and founded a college. One day she met a little girl who had never seen a person with black skin and was afraid. But rather than be offended, Mary took a nearby bouquet of flowers and showed the little girl how pretty the bouquet was because there were so many different colors. Likewise, she said, "God made a bouquet of people with many different skin colors. Isn't it beautiful?" We have to be carefully taught. The German Hessians were hired to fight the Americans because there weren't enough British who would fight their own people. They were fed all kinds of lies about the Americans, that we were a savage, uncivilized, brutal people. Their hate was fed so they'd think they were doing the world a favor by killing us. But then they came in contact with the kind farmer or the peace-loving Quaker, and some of them laid down their arms and became Americans as they found out the stories had been a lie. This is an age of gathering. Every culture, every people, every nation in the world has treasures of knowledge and gifts to bring into the whole. Welcome these gifts. Bring the world to your children. We are all children of the same God, and in the end, we'll find we really are more alike than we are different, and that our Heavenly Father has gifted each of His children with a portion of His light and truth. And now I'll close with the most famous poem written by Rudyard Kipling, who was born in India and lived many years there. He is beloved by children the world over for his Jungle Book and Just So stories. Here's the poem. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop and build them with worn-out tools, if you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss, and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss, if you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on, if you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and which is more, you'll be a man, my son. Bye-bye. See you next time.